You're tuned to KZYX Philo 90.7 FM. You are also tuned to KZYZ Willits and Ukiah 91.5 FM and Fort Bragg at 88.1 FM. Hope you're having a fine morning out there. It's been raining. And we are going to get started here in just a moment with the Mind Body Health Show with Dr. Marvin Trotter, amongst a cast of other interesting characters. I want you to know that support for KZYX comes from our members and Tree of Life Charter School, a public Montessori school in Ukiah for ages 5 through 12, announcing open enrollment during March and open house April 15th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Tree of Life Charter School, where school and home are interconnected. More information at 462-0913 and www.treeoflifeschool.net. With that, thank you all for being here. Been lots of interesting new information there to process, so please stay tuned. We'll be getting you some more updates and things as the day goes on. For now, welcome to the Mind Body Health Show. Hey there, Dr. Marvin Trotter.
Hi, Cobb. Welcome to what should be a very interesting show on coronavirus. I'm happy to have, even though he's sleep-deprived from working last night, Dr. Drew Colfax from the UVMC ER, and Lynn Meadows, physician's assistant. She's at home to discuss the situation. Also, Dr. William Miller from the Coast is going to call in a little bit later. But reason that Lynn Meadows and Drew Colfax are on the phone is Drew's brother's the public health officer for San Francisco. Lynn Meadows' brother is the head of 9 hospitals in Seattle. I think the two of them have a pretty clear, up-to-date view of the coronavirus. So I'm going to start with Drew, who's in the studio with me. Dr. Colfax, first give us the definition of the coronavirus. And then tell us what you have to say.
Well, good morning, everybody. So I think since Marvin and I started talking about doing this show together several days ago, the news has become a bit more intensive, and people have been fairly intensively educated on what the coronavirus is. But to summarize briefly, without getting too much into the weeds, and as we may all know, the coronavirus, this novel coronavirus out of China, which emerged this winter, is part of a large family of viruses, which cause oftentimes illnesses that are quite benign, such as the common cold. However, this virus is quite different from the viruses that cause the common cold in several ways, which is why it is causing such grave concern for us here now. The differences are several. It is unfortunately quite a bit more dangerous. It is a much more deadly pathogen than the other members of the coronavirus family. So calling it a common cold or a type of cold virus is not really an apt analogy. It has also been compared to the flu, but the illness that we experience every year as influenza is additionally quite different from this novel coronavirus. The flu that we get every year is in an entirely different family of viruses. It is a family that we have been exposed to for over 100 years in this country. And we have built up immunity with or without the flu vaccine. We as a population are resistant or able to mobilize a antibody response to influenza each year, which makes us get less sick typically. This coronavirus is novel, and our population is unexposed and naive to it entirely. A closer analogy would be when Europeans landed on in the New World, and we introduced novel diseases to the native population. And as we all know, that had catastrophic effects on the population. That being said, we have healthcare now that can actually help prevent the spread of this. And Marvin and I and Lynn remotely and others are going to talk a little bit about why this is getting such a massive response and why this is not simply an overreaction.
Before we move too far forward, Dr. Colfax, can you just give us a little bit of background information? We know you work as an ER doc, but tell us a little bit about your history quickly, because we've never got to have you on the air here.
That's, I know, and I skipped the how did you get to Mendocino part, but it's, go ahead.
So Marvin has been asking me to come on the show for quite some time about various topics, really, and I've generally deferred, but this time I finally agreed that this would be something for me to come off the mountaintop and talk to people about. I grew up outside of Boonville with my folks and three siblings. I lived here until the mid-80s when I left for college and training and school, and I moved back here about 5 years ago and live just up the hill past the Boonville dump.
Right, and you're working as an ER doc?
Correct, so I am an emergency room physician working at the Kai Emergency Room.
And you didn't sleep last night because you're at work, is that correct?
I've been at work for the last four nights in a row, that's correct.
So thank you so much for coming here this morning, Dr. Drew Colfax.
You're welcome. Hopefully I don't get too much in the weeds with my sleep-deprived state, but I'll try to stay linear.
And let's bring up our additional guest.
Hello, Lynn. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. I'm here.
Okay, you need to speak a little louder, I think.
Okay, is that better?
That's perfect.
Okay.
Okay.
So Lynn Meadows, PA, who delivered two of my children, tell us a little bit about yourself and your brother.
Okay. So I've lived in Mendocino County since 1972, and right now we have a new business called the Madrone Care Network, and that is community-based palliative care for Mendocino County and Lake County. And I reached out to my brother because I feel responsible to my staff and to our patients and our community to know how to respond to the COVID-19 epidemic. Excuse me. And my brother is younger than me. He's my younger brother. But he's a retired admiral from the Marine Corps. He was the Surgeon General of the Marine Corps. During his time, he's not only a physician, but also he has a master's in public health, and he has a lot of experience managing, you know, half the planet, things like that regarding healthcare. So in his retirement, he's running 9 hospitals up in the Seattle area. And I have a lot of information from what they're experiencing up there. And it actually helped me to understand the reality of what this is like, because here in Mendocino County, I think some people think, oh, it's not our problem, it's not here. But as a nation and as citizens of the United States and also as a healthcare provider who understands healthcare systems, I feel that it's, after talking to him, that it's our duty to support the healthcare system and to stay home, and that's going to be the message for everyone. I have a lot of interesting facts about what they're experiencing up there. This weekend, he talked to me about his hospitals are actually 30 miles south of the epicenter, the nursing home, and he said that at that point last weekend, their hospitals, all 9 hospitals, were full to capacity, and that they were expecting a surge in the next few days. And in Washington State, there's 3,000 hospital beds, and they're trying to increase it to 5,000 by April 1st. So they're opening up closed-down hospitals and surgery centers and things like that. But the issue is staffing. And he did tell me that there are some heroic traveling staff members coming from the United States to help them. that this disease is, you know, there's so much unknown about it, and that 80% of people that get infected do fine. They get well in 5 days, or the symptoms last about 5 days. That there's a small percentage of people that go into respiratory distress, and that it can happen very rapidly. That's the thing that is really concerning them, is that people can go from being fine and not fine in a very short amount of hours,
two hours,
having respiratory distress.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second and let Drew discuss what ARDS is, so people will understand what the change is going from this cough and fever to ARDS and why some people die from this.
Sure. So this virus appears to trigger a inflammatory response within our own body, and it causes the lungs to go into a intense inflammatory state where they fill up with fluids. It is best analyzed to a intense pneumonia, but it's really an autoimmune modulated process. And for reasons that I don't think are clear yet, this particular virus causes that infection, and it tends to cause it sort of not on the first day of the infection, but apparently on the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th day of the infection, sort of far into the course of the illness. And I think we'll probably get to this, or Lynn, you can talk about this as well, but it has a predilection, this inflammatory response, amongst the more elderly people. It tends to hit people. The risk point used to be 60, but now they've moved it to 50, but the risk goes up with age. So those who are over 80 are particularly susceptible to developing this intense inflammatory response. And then additionally, people with underlying medical problems are also at much greater risk of developing this response. So people with high blood pressure or heart condition are likely or more likely to develop this critical condition.
I'm going to try to explain the ARDS a little bit more, in that your capillaries next to your air sacs become...
Can you say what ARDS stands for, Marvin?
Adult Respiratory Distress Syndrome. Adult Respiratory Distress Syndrome. Your capillaries become moist by your air sacs, and so the air sacs get moist, get fluid in them, and you can't exchange gases. So we're also going to have Dr. Miller.
This is Dr. William Miller, chief of the medical staff at Mendocino Coast District Hospital.
We're going to break here because I'd like Dr. Miller to discuss what's going on the coast for a moment.
So, folks, we have a third guest. So we got a lot of people on the radio right now. My name's Cobb in the studio. This is the Mind Body Health Show with Dr. Marvin Trotter. We've got Marvin here. We've got Drew Colfax, who is an ER doc over at Adventist Health Ukiah. We've got Lynn Meadows with us, who's a physician's assistant on the phone. And then we've just been joined by Dr. Miller, who has some updates for us. Correct, Marvin?
Correct. Let's hear just a few moments from Dr. Miller to give us a idea of what's going on the coast, and I'd like to go back to Lynn.
Thank you. So I think that what's been said so far is a great summary of the disease, but what I'd like to focus on is reassuring people that we are taking steps to be prepared. And this thing is going to go probably one of two ways. Either it could end up being a lot milder than we are anticipating, and I want people to kind of keep that in mind, that is still a possibility. However, having said that, it also could become very serious. And so while we're hopeful that we won't be hit hard, we are preparing in case we are hit hard. And I know that the hospital in Ukiah and Willits are doing the same things that we're doing. We're working closely with their leadership, Jason Wells, And we are taking a lot of steps to get ready. We have enacted a zero visitor policy, which, of course, has been recommended for all hospitals. We are inventorying all of our supplies, including, of course, protective equipment. We are limiting our use of such equipment so that we will have enough if things get really complicated and bad. People often ask, well, are we going to have enough ventilators? Yes, we have enough ventilators. The challenge is not going to be how many ventilators we have. The challenge, if this gets very complex, is how many staff. It's really going to be more of the staffing. And that is not unique to us. That's a situation for every hospital in the United States, is that the challenge is going to be staffing. So it becomes paramount to protect our staff, to make sure that all healthcare workers remain healthy. And so that's a lot of the policy. That is what drives a lot of the policies. For example, the zero visitor policy is really primarily to not allow staff to get exposed. That's the main driver for that, because once again, if this really becomes a major problem, then we're going to need all those staff. Another thing that people come up with, ask about is, well, why don't we just test everybody? Well, the test medium is limited, and we do have enough to test people who are going to be hospitalized. We started off last week with 375 of the test medium, and it turned out that the hospital in Ukiah needed some. So we did an exchange, and we gave them 175 of our test medium in exchange for some of the personal protective equipment that we needed. And that's an example of the type of wonderful collaborative relationship that we have had with our two fellow hospitals, the two Adventist health hospitals. And, of course, we're looking forward to the fact that in a few months we're going to be joining Adventist Health. Okay. But anyway, so I want to make the public aware that the reason we're not widely testing everybody is because we do have a limited number of those test media.
Thanks very much. I'm going to try to get back to Seattle for a moment. But thank you for calling in and stay on, and we'll get you back on in a few minutes. Okay? All right. Drew just pointed out to me it's acute respiratory distress syndrome, not adult. Acute respiratory distress syndrome. I would like to go back to Lynn Meadows now to give us an idea of what's going on in Seattle, because what worries people is Italy. As Dr. Miller was saying, maybe this isn't going to blow up. But if you look at what's happening in Italy, that's what scares everybody, if you want to understand why we're so concerned. So let's go back to Lynn and hear about Seattle.
Okay, so I agree with Dr. Miller that we have every chance of not having a repeat of what's going on in Seattle here in Mendocino County, because social distancing does work. And the part about this that's important is we have to treat this as real. And it's hard to see it as real when we don't see it in front of us. And I think that's how I'm trying to help today, to show that it is real in our country. And it is real in our community if you consider us as, a nation with citizens that are our community. And he did tell me this morning, I talked to him last night, that they have reached capacity in Seattle, and now they're trying to transfer patients to his hospitals because they don't have any more ventilators in Seattle, and they need to spread it out. And, again, it's about staffing, but it's also about, having enough ventilators. The other thing that is really important, and I wanted Dr. Miller to know this, was that if you have masks and you have personal protection equipment, my brother is telling us to lock everything up because it's getting stolen, that people are hoarding, and that the panic has caused people to bring out their worst behavior. And I think that is one of the things that I would like to influence in our county, that we have a chance here to not have panic, to not have hoarding, and to take care of each other. And the answer is to stay home. And I know that's going to be a burden on a lot of people because of living paycheck to paycheck, and we have to take care of each other. So I think that after I learned and I realized that it was important for us to do that, you become safe if you stay home, and so there is an answer to staying safe, and so I think that can give you some relief as a community.
But what your brother has said to you in Seattle is, they're maxed out on ventilators. The older you are, the less likely that you're going to survive this. I think that's a big issue that people should understand, that if you're over 60, especially if you're over 70, you should take this very seriously. That doesn't mean you should panic, but you should limit your exposure to everybody else.
Go ahead. Well, the thing that I think a lot of us healthcare providers don't realize, Michael told me that if a person ends up on a ventilator, now that's a small number of people, they will require that ventilator for 6 weeks to 8 weeks. And that's going to hold up that ventilator. So it's not short run when you end up on a ventilator. So the real thing is for us to keep safe and stay home. And I'm really thankful that the schools are closing and that our county is stepping up to recognize that's how we're going to protect our citizens.
So I'm going to ask Drew to discuss people coming into the emergency department and how to interact with your primary care doctor if you feel that you're ill.
Okay, and before I get to that, Marvin, I just want to tag on to what Lynn was saying about our community being able to protect ourselves. I think it's going to be a very stressful several weeks or even 6 weeks as this comes through our community. And I think it's going to be imperative that we are kind and patient and take care of one another. We are in a great position to control the spread of this illness through our community, given that we are rural and we are a fairly cohesive community, but it's going to require the participation of all of us. And before I start talking about the ER visits and how healthcare providers are recommending people present for evaluation if they do get sick, I do want to talk just briefly and just for a moment about how this disease spreads and the rapidity of its spread. One of the main concerns, and when we talk about ventilators, one of the main concerns we have as healthcare providers is our resources are going to get swamped. If everybody gets this illness during the same week, the hospitals here in the Bay Area and locally and nationally are not going to have the capacity to take care of all of the really sick people. And that's why the country is shutting things down, because we want to slow the spread of this disease. We want to, quote, flatten the curve. You've probably heard that on the news in the last few days. But the distribution, the rate of the disease spread through a population will create a bell-shaped curve or an umbrella-shaped curve.
I love math.
Yeah, and so
exponential growth, folks.
Exponential growth, indeed. It's the proverbial grain of rice on the chessboard. You can't double a grain of rice on every square, but with all the rice in the world, and we don't want to get in that position, which is why this extraordinary step of shutting things down to prevent person-to-person transmission is imperative. Additionally, and I'll get to your question in just a second, Marvin, but additionally, I think it's critical, and healthcare providers will all agree with me, that even if you're young and healthy and unlikely to get sick or significantly sick from this illness, if you pick up this illness, you are then going to transmit it to other people. And that means you're going to transmit it to your parents or your aunt and uncle or the elderly lady or gentleman down the street. And they could get critically sick from this. So if you don't feel like you need to shelter in place for your own health, shelter in place for the health of the people around you. And that is really something that needs to be messaged to the community in a way that resonates. Finally, and this touches directly on protecting the health of providers, this illness has the unfortunate feature of people remaining asymptomatic for the first several days of its presence in somebody. So as far as we can tell, people are completely asymptomatic for anywhere from 2 to 12 days, which means that you could be sick and you could be transmitting this virus to others for up to 12 days before you yourself realize you're sick. There's also a subset of people who just don't get sick at all, even though they are carrying the virus. So I'm sitting in the studio with Cobb, having been in the ER for the last 4 nights, exposed to people. I very well could be carrying the coronavirus right now.
And I was planning to finally go visit your folks.
Yeah. They are sequestering in place. They have been doing that for several days. So they will not welcome you, Cobb.
So I think that's an important reiteration, that even though that you're 20, okay, you're not going to die from this probably. You're sequestering yourself because you're trying to not knock off the elderly population, which includes myself in Mendocino County. I think it's very interesting that what's happened worldwide is very different. In Italy, 90% of the people that have died in northern Italy have been over the age of 70. Okay. In South Korea, the large majority of people are in their 30s, mostly women, and they have a very small death rate. And I've read that the virus is already mutated to 2 different strains. I don't know if that's explained South Korea and Italy. But what everybody's concerned about is, what can we do to prevent the U.S. from becoming Italy? If that happens, it's going to be horrific. And I think the important thing is for people, let's discuss the illness and what you should be doing if all of a sudden you have a fever and cough.
Okay, so if all of a sudden you have a fever and a cough, there's no need to panic. The vast majority of people who get this illness are going to do just fine. The thing that one wants to do is not rush to the emergency room. If you rush to the emergency room, you're going to be potentially exposing yourself to illness that is probably already there. I think that message has already sunk into the community, because I've actually had a fairly quiet several nights despite this pandemic. However, it certainly makes sense to touch base with a healthcare provider. And on my drive to the studio today, I heard our president say that HIPAA, or Health Information Protection, is going to be waived for the next several weeks or months, or at least in a limited capacity. That's going to allow healthcare providers to talk and look at you on a smartphone from home. And clinics, including our local Anderson Valley Health Clinic, are setting things up so we can talk to people and screen people by phone before you present either at the clinic or in a hospital. That is imperative. We really don't want people coming in to be evaluated for a routine cough and cold. And to loop back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of the testing is critically important as an epidemiologist, and it's incredibly important if you're a public health officer trying to figure out the extent and the spread of the disease. It's not so critically important for somebody at home with mild flu-like symptoms. At this point, and once the disease gets in this county, and it will, anybody who has a cough and a cold and a fever can be presumed to have the COVID-19 coronavirus infection, testing or not. It will then suggest or behoove that person to continue to sequester at home until, if it becomes necessary, they become incredibly ill and need to come to the hospital. That happens suddenly, yes, but not so suddenly that you need to be in the hospital waiting for it to occur. It doesn't happen over a course of minutes or hours. It happens over a course of a day or so. So for those people who have the illness, and for those unfortunate few who get really sick on it, there will be time to get to medical help when and if those people become sick.
So my name's Cobb. You're tuned to KZYX right now. We are conducting the Mind Body Health program with Dr. Marvin Trotter, also joining us. You were just hearing from Dr. Drew Colfax, ER doctor over at Adventist Health in Ukiah. We also have as a guest on the phone, physician's assistant Lynn Meadows, who has been giving us some great updates as well, and also updating us on the situation in Seattle regarding the COVID-19 coronavirus. So a couple things I want to bring up here that I was asked to read for just some other radio business is that there'll be a media advisory. The health officer, Dr. Naomi Mimi Duhan, will hold a press conference updating the community on the COVID-19 situation and issued public health order and recommendation today at approximately 12 p.m. That'll be taking place at the County Administrative Center, the board chambers on 501 Low Gap Road, and it will be broadcast live on KZYX. It will also be live streamed on the Mendocino County YouTube channel. That's a normal service they offer on YouTube for all the county meetings, in case you weren't aware of that. Having said that, let's see here. The press release that I've been asked to read here. I'm getting my eyes straight, everybody. Hanging out there. And by the way, you know, regarding panic and staying calm and all that, it's a great thing to do. I myself have read books. I recommend Rebecca Solnit's A Paradise Built in Hell. If you're out there, have a lot of time to read, that just shows like looting and panicking and people being very unneighborly has actually been proven false in most disaster situations throughout United States history. And she analyzes examples. So we have a great track record, people, of coming together and supporting each other through this. And there's a lot less to worry about if we're taking proactive actions against these things. Anyway, here's the county health officer issues order and recommendation that's coming up. The Mendocino County declared a local health emergency due to the COVID-19 pandemic. This time, there's no evidence of community spread in Mendocino County. However, due to the crisis level shortage of testing for this disease, and given that nearby San Francisco Bay Area is experiencing outbreaks with extensive community spread, we recognize the imminent threat presented to Mendocino County's public health due to COVID-19. The health officer order is stated, due to this rapidly evolving situation and in alignment with the CDC guidance on mass gatherings from March 15th, 2020, health officer Dr. Naomi Duhan has ordered a ban on all non-essential public or private gatherings of 50 people or more. For gatherings of 10 to 50 people, COVID-19 mitigation measures must be implemented, including social distancing by allowing all attendees to stand or sit at least 6 feet from any other attendee. A violation of an order is a misdemeanor, punishable by fine, imprisonment, or both. Wouldn't we be really close together in prison? That last part was me. And, you know, these opinions on the air are not the radio stations. They're folks like myself who just happen to be reading the stuff that's being put on the air. Everybody, thanks for bearing with us. And now back to your regularly scheduled Mind Body Health with Marvin Trotter, Drew Colfax, and Lynn Meadows. Thanks, everybody.
I'd like to see if Lynn has something more to say before we start taking questions from the public.
I'll say that I put down some points that I felt were pearls from my brother.
Okay.
He said that he's recommending that people do their advance directives. There's a very small percentage of people that have done their advance directive, and he thinks it's very important to get it done, because if you do get sick, it's good if your wishes are written down. And so why would you want to do an advance directive? Because you want us to understand, as healthcare providers, your wishes, and also, if you have any strong convictions about life support, it'd be good to get it down on paper. And you can Google California Advanced Directive and download free advanced directives, and they can be signed by two people that are not named as your spokespeople. So that's just a recommendation that he made. And then the other thing that he brought up to me was that the symptoms are not just a dry cough, a fever. Also, they're having people present with GI diarrhea and vomiting, and that has thrown them off because they weren't testing everyone. So I'm just putting that out there.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, it's about 10% apparently who present with primarily a diarrheal type of illness. And again, you know, some people just won't have any symptoms at all, which can be fairly insidious because it means they are in the community spreading the virus to others unknowingly. So
yeah. I think that's a big takeaway for people to understand.
And so that's really why the county and the country are taking what seem to be draconian measures of shutting everything down.
Tell us about San Francisco and your brother being the health officer in San Francisco. I was even personally surprised they got all six counties to do this Friday.
Yeah, so I mean, San Francisco is sort of in a different position from us in that it sits right up against a bunch of other counties and jurisdictions. And so one county or one city can't really implement a plan unless all of the adjoining cities and counties are part of the same plan. So it required a coordinated response for it to have any meaningful impact. Yeah, it finally became increasingly clear that fairly aggressive measures in terms of limiting spread were necessary. But taking measures such as shutting down schools, particularly in a major school jurisdiction like San Francisco County, is helpful. But the sequelae of making a decision like that means that kids are going to be gathering somewhere else, and they are going to still be exposed somewhere else, and they're going to be spending more time at home with extended family members, increasing the risk of transmission. So it's a moving target without hard data, but the general approach of limiting human interaction is clearly what is needed. How to limit that in an effective, safe way that doesn't result in too much disruption, both at the individual and family level, is, you know, still part of the analysis.
And in San Francisco, they've banned people from going to bars. And I mean, explain the San Francisco ordinance a little bit more.
So they have made the decision to shut down bars and restaurants, and they have banned any large gathering. I think the number is 50 currently, as I recollect. But it may change over the course of the next 24 to 48 hours. And I expect that the federal response is going to change as this evolves. I would not be surprised if we start to see national domestic travel restrictions to limit the spread from place to place. So that's all coming. You know, it may.
So this is quite a change from 2 weeks ago.
It's a massive change from 2 weeks ago. From 2 days ago, exactly, Lynn. I mean, I talked to Marvin on Saturday about doing this radio show, and none of this had happened yet. So it's really occurring very quickly, and I think it's necessary. I think we're in a fortunate position in this county to be able to really enact social distancing in a way that would slow the spread of the virus through our community to a rate that would be manageable for healthcare providers. And to circle back to the question of ventilators, one thing we have in this county is it's a small community with small hospitals and small ICUs. If this and when this pandemic hits California, all the other hospitals in the state or regionally are going to be full. And frankly, they are typically full all the time, even without this pandemic. And so we are not going to be able to transfer people out of this county to another facility because there will be nowhere to send them. And we are thus really making extensive efforts to encourage people to really adhere to these recommendations because we do not have the capacity in our collective hospitals in this county to manage 50 people who need to be on ventilators.
I think that's something that people should understand, that there's, you know, our ICUs are full almost all the time as it is.
I transferred a patient this morning over 125 miles away because that was the closest ICU bed already, right now.
Right now. And
that's a non-COVID-19 patient.
A non-COVID-19 patient, yes. Yeah. Yes.
125 miles. I'd like to take a moment here to tell you that the healthcare workers that are in the hospital, that are in the ICU, that are in the ER, I think people should appreciate the risk and dedication that they're showing to be showing up every day for work.
So I have a question in that regard, for any of you that know the answer to this, but given that people are becoming infected, coming down with the illness, and then recovering, are they then permanently immune? Are they still able to spread the illness as a carrier at that point? What's that like?
So it appears that people are not permanently immune. In fact, some people have been testing positive for the virus even weeks after they have recovered from the illness, which means that they are still perhaps shedding the virus and still can transmit it to others. As to immunity, I don't think we have clear data on that. I certainly haven't seen any yet. There might be some, but I just haven't seen it yet.
Got it. Thanks.
So I'd like to talk about the children that are out of school, and because one of the things is that a lot of people that live marginally financially, the children really count on the meals they get at school, and with the schools closed, that they have food insecurity. And I was talking to my brother about that, and what they're doing in Seattle is that they are delivering the school lunches twice a day to the bus stops where they normally pick up the children so that they can continue to be fed.
I know,
and
that
I don't know.
Ukiah Unified is doing something similar.
Ukiah.
Ukiah Unified is giving out two meals a day between 11 and 1 at different places. But I think
there you go.
Ukiah Good. Unified, I know is that. Making some similar
and
response.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that got added. Yeah.
And I think, Lynn, that also speaks to the need for us to pull together as a community. I think we need to check in with each other. We need to make sure that the elderly person down the road has what he or she needs. We need to make sure people have enough food. And that's going to require a collective effort amongst everybody in this community. But, you know, it also is going to require, you know, awareness that there's some really vulnerable people in this county that are going to be susceptible. There's a homeless population. It's very hard to be sequestered at home when you don't have a home. So, you know, be kind to the homeless population. Make sure they have food. Help with the shelter. I mean, it's just there's a lot of people that need our help in the community, and I think it's going to require an aggressive level of awareness from all of us to make sure that those needs are met. It's not just from the healthcare providers, but it's from everybody else as well.
Cool. So with that, we have about 15 minutes left in the show. You're tuned to KZYX. This is the Mind Body Health Show with Dr. Marvin Trotter. We're joined today by Dr. Drew Colfax, an ER doctor from Adventist Health Ukiah, and Lynn Meadows, a physician's assistant, also with Ukiah Valley Medical.
Yeah, she was. She's now doing palliative care. Principally.
Yeah, thanks for being here, Lynn. And we've been, of course, updating the community on the current state of the COVID-19, what are we calling it, a pandemic? Is that the correct terminology?
It is a pandemic, yes.
Okay. Having said that, we are open to taking listener calls, questions specifically for our guests, experts in their field right now that we're all curious about. So the number to call for that would be 895-2448. That's 707-895-2448, and we can get a few listener calls in during the next 15 minutes. And we'll try one right now. Caller, you are live on the radio. Go ahead with your question.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to know. Hello?
Yeah, yes, you're live ahead. On the radio. Go ahead with
Thanks.
Your question.
I want to know how hospitals are going beyond just sanitizing, just beyond cleaning. Are there any non-permeable solutions to preventing this? Also, I understand that Mexico is coming up with bubbles like portable hospitals.
Okay.
Could we have something like that so that we don't have to just rely on the one or the two that are full to capacity?
Okay. Good questions. We'll see what Dr. Colfax says.
So the question about the cleaning is an excellent one. Fortunately, this virus can be eradicated using standard, what we call deep cleaning in any infected room. So that is something that we're very good at doing at Adventist Ukiah, and I am certain at any other hospital in the county. Additionally, we have set up not a bubble so much as a screening tent outside the emergency room in Ukiah, where we're going to start screening people who are at suspicion for having the COVID-19 illness. It will help prevent people from coming into the hospital with the illness and will minimize the risk of transmitting the illness within the emergency room.
I have a few questions regarding cleanliness, habits, hygiene sort of things for any of you, which is, what about, normal soap and water? Is that proving very effective? Obviously, basic hygiene is always effective against any illness. And I'm curious, too, just about when people are in their homes, what extra measures are practical measures that they would like to, maybe think about.
Good question. Soap and water works extremely well. We don't need sanitizer. There's very little data to suggest that we need to hoard toilet paper. But yes, soap and water will eradicate the virus off our hands. We, as a species, love to touch our face. And it's very easy to say, do not touch your face. But that's how you get the illness. You touch a contaminated surface, and then you touch your face, and then you get sick.
Or you inhale the droplets.
Or you inhale the droplets. But the virus lives on surfaces for up to 2 days, which means if somebody who has this virus touches a doorknob and you touch that doorknob and then you touch your face, you could transmit it to yourself. So I can say it, but people won't listen. They will still touch their face. So the cure for that, or the solution for that, is to be neurotic about washing your hands.
Sounds like even clothes washing, if you have that ability, that privilege potentially.
Clothes washing is also helpful. It's going to simply lower the viral load, if you will, and the risk of it getting into your body.
Right. And they're in the hospitals telling people not to wear polyester clothes to work.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The virus appears to like plastic surfaces, so it tends to live longer on plastic.
There's some irony in that. I'm not going to go in deep there. Let's take another call. Welcome to Mind Body Health. You're live on the radio. Go ahead with your question.
Hi. Thanks, everybody, for showing up for this for the community, of course. My question regards, I want to direct it to Lynn with her info from Seattle area. What was there any problems you heard from your brother regarding pharmaceutical supply? I'm thinking if people who are 60 or over, et cetera, kind of in that that part of the algorithm, want to prepare ahead of time for a couple weeks if they came up with any problems refilling prescriptions a little bit ahead of time. And I'm going to hang up and let you continue. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.
So I can answer the question. They are recommending that people get their prescriptions filled so that they can stay home for a few weeks, and there's been no problem doing that. The only supply issues they're having are the protective gears for the staff, masks. We haven't talked about masks, but there's surgical masks and there's N95 masks, and they've been having trouble keeping enough supplies of those.
Got it. And just for context, Lynn, can you reintroduce when you're saying your brother, who that individual was and the relevancy?
Sure. My brother's a physician, and he is the chief medical officer for 9 hospitals in the Seattle area. And so they are at the epicenter of the epidemic for the United States. And he's basically working 24 hours a day dealing with this issue.
Got it. Thanks. And we have another call. Welcome to Mind Body Health. You're live on the radio. Please go ahead with your question.
Got it. Thanks.
Is this me?
Yeah. And turn off your radio, please.
Yeah, that's what I was doing.
Thanks.
A couple of points. One, I'm not sure you talked about this. I'd like to hear your people discuss the threat, particularly to the healthcare profession. I'm related to a healthcare person in Sonoma County, and for one thing, she's been appalled by the infection control. They're being asked to reuse their respirators from one day to the next. And another point that she made was that the apparently in China, many of the younger healthcare providers themselves were overrepresented among the fatalities. There was some issue about how much of the stuff you were exposed to or something.
Yeah, good questions.
Those are excellent questions, and frankly, I don't think we have a really good answer as to why some areas around the globe are seeing higher deaths of younger people versus older people. The deaths in Italy were predominantly people over 70. There were a lot of young healthcare providers in China who died from the acute illness. And those are questions that people are looking into, whether there are sort of several strains of this virus now, and some are causing the younger people to get ill. We don't really know yet.
I wonder if they also were exposed to a lot more viral load.
Potentially. I don't think we have answers that are definitive. And as for the respirators, yes, currently we actually have a fairly good supply of masks and respirators in the county. We are saving, we healthcare providers, at least at Ukiah, are saving our N95 masks and using them over and over again because we see many patients many times a day.
One thing that Lynn said is that they're going more to surgical masks in Seattle as it becomes more of a droplet concern more than an aerosol concern.
Correct. And I think we will move to surgical masks once that becomes a bit more clear. The CDC has been a little bit slow to make that recommendation, but I think it's going to come down the pike in the next day or two. And before we move on, I don't want the show to end without touching, and I think we've probably made many listeners a bit more anxious, but I think there's going to be a significant component of anxiety, particularly for people with underlying conditions. And I just urge those people to reach out to providers if they feel like they need to talk to somebody. I think people with depression and substance use disorders are going to find this a very trying couple weeks. We are a social creature, and we don't like to be socially isolated from one another.
And cut off our baseball and our basketball.
That's withdrawal if you want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey. So I just think that needs to be, you know, recognized. We healthcare providers are aware of that increasing need, and we are going to be there for people who need us either remotely or in person if necessary. But it's going to be a significant burden on all of us.
So can you give us a very, you know, less than 5 minutes outline of what the command tree is right now? When you say coming down the pike, we know the CDC is like a national organization. Is that where your hospitals are receiving direction from? Or just if you could outline that a little bit for us, how that works.
So the CDC is sort of taking the lead on this. And then it is... that tends to be followed by each state's Department of Public Health and then each local jurisdiction, whether it's county or city level. But the CDC is really sort of what is providing the overarching structure that we as a nation need to follow. So, it is, however, a big bureaucracy, and as any big bureaucracy functions, they tend to function a little bit slowly. So we are finally getting to the point where we need to be, but it takes a little while.
As former public health officer, this is a very structured, you know, Mendocino County has already opened their emergency office for communications. Mm-hmm. There's a, you know, that goes to a regional and then a state level. The hospital can ask it for supplies. We have storage supplies in public health. And then you go to a regional and statewide. I think as you see, San Francisco and the surrounding areas are doing things ahead of the CDC. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's certainly everybody looks to the CDC for the last word on the epidemiology of everything. but I think you'll see public health departments doing things much on their own.
So the hospitals themselves, are they working in tandem with, say, the county health officer?
Exactly. There's a direct line of communications and there's meetings that occur, I'm sure, every day between public health and the hospital. There's a very well-shaped county public health hospital doctors system that's been used a lot and is well-staffed.
Got it. And in terms of the both of your roles working at the hospitals, are there any contact information links that you want to point out to people?
There's public health has a phone number you can call, and I'm sorry I don't have the number to tell you, but public health has a phone number you can call to discuss the situation, get referred to a primary care doctor or MCHC, and it's a local number that's available.
Well, and regarding emergency room protocols and what you're hoping people will take away from this today in terms of how they interact with their local emergency room?
Well, I think the important thing is to realize that just because you have a cough and a fever is no reason to drive to the emergency department. I think the point of having significant shortness of breath, high fevers, urine respiratory distress, I think that's an obvious thing you need to seek immediate care for. That's a small percentage of people.
No, and I can't emphasize that enough. I mean, we really want people to come to the emergency room only when they start to have a hard time breathing from this illness. Stay at home. Stay well hydrated, stay away from others, and touch base with your healthcare provider either by phone or on an iPhone type of app, and stay in contact with your loved ones so they can monitor how you're doing. There is some suggestion that people should take Tylenol for this illness rather than ibuprofen. The Europeans have been stressing this much more than the Americans. But my personal recommendation would be to reach for Tylenol first rather than ibuprofen.
So having said that, I just want to let everybody know we're coming up on the 10 o'clock hour. You're tuned to KZYX Philo 90.7 FM, KZYZ Willits and Ukiah 91.5 FM, and Fort Bragg at 88.1 FM. This is the Mind Body Health Show with Dr. Marvin Trotter. We have two guests with us, Dr. Drew Colfax, an ER doc over at Adventist Health Ukiah, and also physician's assistant Lynn Meadows is joining us on the phone. Thank you all for being here. However, the program director just said we could take some extra time if we'd like to maybe take some more listener calls.
Yes, let's take some more listener call. I want to say that Camille Schrader at Mental Health picked up on what Drew had said, and they have an access line or are doing telehealth, and they'll be responsive to the mental health issues.
So bear with us. We have Loose Cannon Classics coming up with Susan Jewell in a moment. We're going to take a few moments. There might be a hiccup at 10 o'clock. And take some more listener calls. If you'd like to call in with a question for any of our guests, the number's 707-895-2448. We'll get you live in the studio like this caller. Welcome, caller. You're live on Mind Body Health. Go ahead with your question.
I'm sorry. What was the question again?
Boosting one's immune system. Let's say some home remedies or whatever.
So I think that's a great idea, and I think part of one of the things we're going to have to deal with is while we are sequestering and practicing social distancing, we're going to want to keep doing things that keep us healthy and well. So a good diet, if you have access to it, is important. Exercise is important. Just don't go to a gym. Go outside and walk. Those type of things are going to help quite a bit. As for supplements or other things that are going to perhaps boost your immune system, they might help. They might have a placebo effect that's significant, but I would certainly suggest a healthy diet and just a general attempt to manage one's stress and anxiety are going to help even more.
I would add to that, this is Lynn Meadows, that there's anecdotal, at least, link between smoking and the severity of the disease. And, of course, as healthcare providers, we've always been recommending that people stop smoking, but that is a way to boost your immune system and to protect yourself.
That's true. In Italy, a lot of people that got very ill were smokers.
And that's actually it's a hope that we, as Americans, will not see quite the severe impact. A lot of the countries that have had significant mortality from this illness have very high incidence of smoking. So the deaths in China were largely male, and the smoking rate of males in China is astronomical. Same with Iran and Italy and a few of the other countries that have had significant outbreaks. So our smoking rate in this country, fortunately, is fairly low. But for you smokers out there, this is yet another doctor telling you that it is time to stop smoking.
It's such a stressful, perfect time to go cold turkey.
We had a radio issue in the disconnect, so apparently people didn't hear your answer to Cass's question about how long you infected before you become symptomatic.
Okay, so to circle back to a previous question, the infectivity... We don't have absolute number, but the typical prodrome, or this period where you are asymptomatic before you get sick, is about 3 to 5 days. It may be as long as 12. And then the illness lasts itself about 5 days for those who have a mild illness. And so together, that's approximately a 10-day period, which is why we have been encouraging a 14-day period of self-imposed quarantine after exposure or after the illness.
Got it. We're going to take another listener call. Again, if you want to call in with a question for either of our guests, ER Doc, Dr. Drew Colfax, and Physician's Assistant Lynn Meadows. Hey, Lynn, what's the, like, would I call you Dr. Meadows, or what's your proper title?
You can call me Lynn. I'm a physician assistant. Some people call me P.A. Meadows. But,
P.A. Meadows, that's fun.
I'm not a doctor.
Got it. Thanks. Okay, we have another call. Welcome to Mind Muddy Health. You're live on the radio. Go ahead with your question.
This is person 85. I'm sheltering in place, and friends will be bringing my groceries and my mail. And I'm wondering if one infected person has dropped a letter into the mail slot at the post office, can that contaminate my mail? How can I decontaminate my mail before I bring it into my house?
You know, I fielded that exact same question with my parents. The answer is unfortunately somewhat nebulous. There is theoretical risk of exposure via mail. This virus, like any virus, does not like sunlight. So if you have the capacity to lay your mail out on your deck and sit it in the sun for a few minutes, flip it over, that will go a long way towards sterilizing it.
Well, that's not going to help today.
It's not going to help today. That's true. But, you know, rain is a rare thing these days.
So what's the lifespan of the virus in the environment so far as you know?
48 hours. So if you want to put your mail in a sack and not look at it for 2 days, that would also work.
I love that idea with my bills. Hey, and that's going to reduce my stress. Sorry, folks. Okay, look, I'm not an expert. I'm just pushing the buttons here. Welcome to Mind Body Health. You're live on the radio. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, I appreciate the previous question about how to boost the immune system. And I would like to add a few things because I created a flyer. I teach nutrition. And immune-boosting foods like kale, broccoli, berries, and mushrooms. Also eating antiviral foods like garlic, ginger, and spices. And eating high-fiber foods so that it feeds our healthy gut bacteria. And reducing added sugar. Because adding added sugar lowers our immune system. And if people want to get the flyer, they can call me at 707-397-5575 or email me at Petra, P-E-T-R-A, at wholeplantfoods.info. And today I'll put it on my website to wholeplantfoods.info.
All right. Thanks for the call.
I think that's excellent advice, and it's not excellent advice just for this illness, but for healthiness
preventative health care in general, which yes. Dr. Trotter has been so good about. I'm just going to interject there that I know personally that eating fresh garlic is an excellent way to keep that social distancing thing in practice without even having to think about it. Like, the 6 feet away thing just tends to happen. Yeah.
It's not the garlic cob, it's you.
Thank you, Dr. Colfax. Shall we take another question? Okay. Welcome to Mind Body Health. You're live on the radio. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, my question is this going to be a 2 week or 3 week shelter in place kind of a thing, or is it going to be months that we have to live with this?
I think that's an excellent question. That's one that came up to me, came to myself very early on. The first thing that came to my mind when this first happened was, thank God it's not happening in November when everybody and their mother has cough, fevers, etc. Unfortunately, I don't know that anybody knows what the flattening of the curve means. If things are peaking in Seattle April 1st, where are they going to peak May 1st or June 1st? I don't think that's known yet. I watched a show on the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic. They had a couple of 100,000 people die in the spring, had a good summer, and had a 500,000 people die the last 3 months of the year. I don't know that anybody knows what's going to happen. I think that's why people may be expressing doubt at the recommendations are so severe now. The reason is because you're trying to prevent a 1918 epidemic where it has this, it lasts a whole year, or that you have this hit and miss where it's just going here and here and there all the time. I don't know that anybody knows what the next 6 months is going to look like. Do you have any prediction?
I don't think we really, I agree that we really don't have a great sense. And that's actually where test kits and testing are going to be imperative. It's going to be helpful to know where the illness is spreading and where it is dying out. But that's going to really play out over the course of the next 2 to 3 weeks to 2 to 4 months in a way that is hard to predict. It's also going to depend on how good of a job we do at this social distancing. If we do a great job of it, we will stop this virus and it will not become an issue. And then we'll all look like hysterics for doing all this thing because nothing ever happened.
Yeah, right, that's but I'd the rather beauty be of the, preventative care.
I'd rather be do too much now and be upset about it or, wish we had done something different rather than have this ongoing discussion 6 or 10 weeks from now.
Yeah, my sense is that the response is due to the fact that so little is known. And so that's kind of the nature of the thing is every answer is a long-winded version of we're doing all this because we don't know, but we know this stuff works.
We don't want to become Italy. I think that's
exactly right. And we do know that nearly 10% of the people who tested positive in Italy died from this illness, which is an extraordinarily high mortality rate. It's actually probably not that high because a lot of people probably simply weren't tested. But That's scary, and that's something we need to avoid.
So, having said that, we are going to be moving on soon to Loose Cannon Classics with Susan Jewell over on the coast, and it's a great program. We hope you'll stay tuned. We'll take one more call on the air, and then we have a few closing remarks to go over and some updates, and then we'll move on to Loose Cannon Classics. Thank you so much for staying tuned to KZYX. And just so you know, this will all be linked up on the KZYX Jukebox service, a common service provided. So if you tuned in and you're wondering what's what, you will definitely be able to, through the World Wide Web service, be able to access some kind of transcript, if you will, a review, not a transcript, sorry folks, of this whole program. Welcome to Mind Body Health. You're live on the radio. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, guys. Thanks. Just a comment and a question. The comment is there's a recent paper that came out on February 15th talking about the lifespan of the virus, and they found that it could last certain temperatures ranging from up to 9 days. So depending on what surface the material is on and the viral load, it could last up to 9 days. And then
and what's
you guys
your question?
Were talking about testing. When are you guys going to start testing for both strains of the virus instead of the just one? Because right now in the United States, they're just testing for one.
Who has any idea? I mean, the testing of the first one is being so difficult now. I have no idea.
Yeah, I haven't heard when we're going to be testing for both strains. And actually, there's emerging data that I don't think has reached the popular press that there are probably several variations of the strain already in the U.S. It's not clear what clinical significance that has.
Well, having said that, everybody, thanks for tuning in to KZYX and the Mind Body Health Program. We're going to start moving ourselves along to Loose Cannon Classics. P.A. Meadows, Lynn Meadows, has been so great in joining us over the phone. Thanks for being here, Lynn. And what kind of closing comments would you like to take before we go?
Well, I think I have two things. One is that I am staying home. I'm working from home, and I encourage everyone to do that, to stay in touch with each other, not in person. I also want to thank the response from Partnership Health, which is the Medi-Cal program, and a very large percentage of Mendocino County residents are on a partnership, and they're allowing us to do telemedicine with you. So you can call your providers, and we can talk to you, and they're encouraging us to see people by, you know, FaceTime or on the phone instead of in person. And so just don't hesitate to make phone calls to your providers, and we're here. We're going to be here for you.
And I know certainly here locally at the AV Health Center, and I think the other rural health centers, they are gearing up and equipped to do telemedicine with everybody that needs it. So reach out, call clinics, call your local resources, and be kind to one another. This is going to be a stressful few weeks, and I think we all need to be patient.
All right. Health center phone number for public health. Alicia just gave me the good number. It's 234-6052. 234-6052. I talked to them yesterday. They were a lot of help. It's the number anybody can call locally, 234-6052. Thank you, Alicia.
Thanks. So, Dr. Colfax, any other closing comments you'd like to make today?
I just think we all need to be patient, and we need to be kind to one another. We need to take care of each other. This is not going to be something that health institutions are going to be able to manage entirely on their own. It's going to require the entire community to protect ourselves.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, and Marvin, KZYX. Anything else? Okay, so that about does it for the Mind Body Health Show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to KZYX Radio. My name's Cobb in the studio here, and I have a few updates for you. Loose Cannon Classics with Susan Jewell is in the wings, about to go ahead. So as far as getting to reduce a bit of that anxiety, I highly recommend that program. She puts on some great music curated for you. Whether you're reducing stress or not, just fantastic. So I have a few updates here to read to you. The health officer, Dr. Naomi Mimi Duhan, will hold a press conference updating the community on the COVID-19 situation and issued public health order and recommendation today at approximately 12 p.m. Physically, that's taking place at the County Administrative Center, the board chambers on 501 Logap Road in Ukiah. And it will be broadcast live here on KZYX. It will also be live streamed on the Mendocino County YouTube channel, which is easy to find and search for on your browser. It's a ongoing common service for all the Board of Supervisor regular meetings on Tuesdays, that kind of thing. So that's available to you as a resource if you're sheltering in place at home there and you have internet access. So stay tuned to the internet. Stay tuned to KZYX in particular. And I have this update to read to you. This is the county health officer order and recommendation. This is what the press conference is going to focus on today. Let's see. Mendocino County declared a local health emergency due to the COVID-19 pandemic. At this time, there's no evidence of community spread in Mendocino County. However, due to the crisis level shortage of testing for this disease, and given that nearby San Francisco Bay Area is experiencing outbreaks of COVID-19 with extensive community spread, we recognize the imminent threat presented to Mendocino County's public health due to COVID-19. Due to this rapidly evolving situation and in alignment with the CDC guidance on mass gatherings from March 15, 2020, Health Officer Dr. Naomi Duhan has ordered a ban on all non-essential public or private gatherings of 50 people or more. For gatherings of 10 to 50 people, COVID-19 mitigation measures must be implemented, including social distancing by allowing all attendees to stand or sit at least 6 feet from any other attendee. A violation of an order is a misdemeanor punishable by fine, imprisonment, or both. So that's an update for you, everybody out there. Thanks for tuning in to KZYX. My name's Cobb, volunteer here at the radio station. And before we move on, I'm just going to put a plug in for this community resource. Pretty obvious that it's an essential service that we depend on, especially while we're sheltering in place. Matters during pretty much every emergency. And I know there's a pledge drive coming up, but you can always call staff here at 895-2324 to pledge your support, to make a donation or get a membership. It's a big deal towards keeping this infrastructure going. This place needs all the help it can get, and yet the ship keeps sailing very successfully all the time. So a big thank you to all of you out there who continue to support this radio station. It's a vital service that so many of us depend on, especially those of us who are part of these vulnerable populations that we are speaking to, definitely in the upper age group demographic and those without easy internet access. So if you're out there and have that ability to stay tuned to your local radio station, to be a supporter, to be a volunteer, that kind of thing, reach out and participate. It's a really big deal and it helps a lot. So thanks everybody for tuning in to Mind Body Health today. We went a bit over time. Thanks to Loose Cannon Classics for being so gracious in that regard. And with that said, we're going to move on to some excellent music. Again, look it up on Jukebox through the KZYX website. You can get today's program starting at 9 a.m. and going almost to 10:20 if you missed something earlier and you want to catch up.